want to pull out your handout dated from last week. That would be good. We've looked at a couple of foxes that get into the vineyard of marriage. And another word we could use are weeds or threats. These would be threats that come into marriages that threaten to harm it and cause it to be less fruitful. And we've talked about relational distance. We've talked about the put on to combat relational distance is revelation, as being a revealing person that will increase intimacy. We've talked about selfishness as another threat to marriage, and talked about becoming like Christ and giving, becoming a giver, not a taker, and to die daily to ourself and to take up our cross and follow Christ. That will be the put on for selfishness. I think that's a put on for everything. That is the premier verse in many ways, marriage verse, I think. If any man will be my disciple, let him take up his cross daily, deny himself and come and follow me. That is the recipe for a really good marriage. And you have two people who are doing that, who are selflessly, sacrificially living for each other. I mean, those things that you want out of marriage, you'll get if you have two people doing that. That is the natural fruit that comes out of crucified lives. So today I wanted to get into a third. By the way, while I'm thinking of it, I wanted to make sure that I didn't come across like if you are not, you and your spouse aren't the deepest and most intimate of best friends, that maybe that's not the case for you. Maybe that hasn't happened. I don't want you to feel guilty about that. I think what the scriptures encourage more than anything is companionship. We talk quite a bit about that. Companionship, intimacy, oneness. I think out of that you're going to be great friends. But it doesn't mean you don't have other great friends as well. But I do think that our spouse should be our most intimate, trusted confidant and friend, if at all possible. I think that's the scriptural goal. But I don't want you to feel guilty. If you can still have a good marriage and not have your spouse as your very best friend. I think it can even be better if they are. I guess that's the way I would go. So anyway, a little feedback on that I thought might be important to pass on. So let's go to, I think it's page 3 or 4? Page 4. Yeah, page 4. And want to talk about one, and I don't, you know, I want to talk about complacency or coasting or inattention or neglect would be some words that I would use here. Maybe one or two of these has hit you so far and it's been good. Let the Spirit direct you. Maybe this isn't one that's a problem for your marriage. Maybe it is. But either way, I hope this is beneficial. But I think it's common, particularly among people who've been married for a very long time or a little longer. I think that coasting, complacency, inattention, neglect would be another word you could add there. I thought it might be helpful just to think about the meaning of complacency. It's a calm sense of well-being and security, the quality or state of being satisfied. Satisfaction or self-satisfaction accompanied by unawareness of actual dangers or deficiencies. So I think this happens in particularly good marriages, more than maybe marriages that aren't, where you have done the hard work day by day and followed the good marriage principles, and you have a good marriage, and you can come to a place where we've arrived, or I don't have to continue to do these things. So I think that happens a lot. And time just has a way of doing that. I think life has a way of doing that. Children have a way of doing that. All these other things that come along for a married couple, other commitments, can bring us to that point. So I'm using a quote from What Do You Expect book, or marriage book by Paul Tripp here. Your marriage may be great, but it is not saved. So this would be speaking to those who have great marriages, which I hope is the majority of you in here. No marriage this side of eternity is totally problem protected. No marriage is all that it could be. This side of heaven, daily temptations are constant threats to you and your marriage. So here we see those foxes are those threats. There's constant threats. And I like this statement, this side of heaven, the spiritual war goes on. If you're married and you have a Christ-centered marriage, you are a target of the enemy. You just are. The spiritual war is there. He would delight no more in shaming the name of Christ and the image of the kingdom than to destroy your marriage and break it apart. And I like this last statement. This side of heaven, good marriages are good marriages because the people in those marriages are committed to doing daily the things that keep their marriages good. So that last sentence on that page is an important one. I've said it before, the good marriages are good marriages because people that have good marriages work on it. And he uses the word here, doing daily the things that keep their marriages good. Things go wrong when couples think they have reached the point that they can retire from their marital work and chill out, lie back, and slide. Perhaps the greatest danger to a good marriage is a good marriage because when things are good, we're tempted to give way to feelings of arrival and we forsake the attitudes and disciplines that have, by God's grace, made our marriage what it has become. Again, that's from Paul Tripp's book, What Did You Expect? So does anybody relate to that? Any of you who have been married for, I don't know, a number of years, that you can kind of slide into that kind of situation? I know it's hard to admit that, right, in front of a bunch of people.
I would say, yeah, especially you caught up with kids and, well, I got to get this done, I got to get this done. Sometimes your wife gets pushed back. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah. It's easy to do. Mm-hmm. So many good things that we need to be giving attention to.
Right.
Come along.
And the constant tyranny of the urge.
Yeah.
It's not really the same thing as contentment, but it's like things that it takes an actual, you've got to just, it's an act of doing it, of saying, I need to keep the priorities, otherwise there will always be something that's urgent.
Yeah. It is your primary, your horizontal relationship, it is the primary one. It has to be protected. It has to be cultivated like a garden. And if it doesn't, it will look like a garden that doesn't get attention after a while. I've inserted in here a quote from R.C. Sproul, but a common fox in a vineyard marriage is a husband who begins to take his wife for granted, diverts his attention and energy elsewhere, and generally stops pursuing, attending, courting, romancing his bride. Now, I put husband in here because I think that this following statement comes from a husbanding book. But that can happen to wives too. Wives can quit paying attention to their husbands. So I don't want you to think I'm just picking on you men. But I think husbands are the initiators and they're the leaders. And I think they should set that example. So I'm going to call a little bit more of this to the husband's attention here. But it works both ways. And this paragraph I'm about to read here, I think, is helpful to kind of flesh out what I'm talking about. This was actually in the book, The Complete Husband, and Lou Priolo is quoting R.C. Sproul from The Intimate Marriage. But Lou Priolo would say say this, that the biggest mistake that a husband makes is he quits pursuing his wife, quits cherishing her, nourishing her, courting her, pursuing her, because he thinks, got that done, on to the next challenge. But R.C. Sproul wrote this: it is all too easy for married men to view their wives with steadily diminishing importance once the wedding is over. Before that, the man expends an enormous amount of energy seeking to woo and win his wife. He enters the courting relationship with the zeal and dedication of an Olympic-bound athlete. It's pretty descriptive. He gives his girl his undivided attention, making her the center of his devotion. When the marriage is achieved, our athlete turns his attention to other goals. He figures he has the romantic aspect of his life under control and now goes on to scale new heights. He devotes less and less time to his wife, treating her as less and less important. In the meantime, the woman, being accustomed to the courting process, enters the marriage relationship expecting that to continue. There we go. Unmet expectations, or what did you expect? As the marriage progresses, she finds herself devoting more attention to her husband than she did before the marriage, while he is devoting less attention to her. Now she's washing his clothes, cooking his meals, making his bed, and cleaning his house. At the same time, he's becoming less affectionate, taking her out less, and generally paying less attention to her. Now that's a generalization in some sense, but in your marriage, that may be true to some degree or another. Not entirely to this extent, but it could be happening. And again, picking on the husbands here, this can happen to wives too. They can be paying less and less attention to their husband as time goes on as well, because they have kids, lots of responsibilities, have to take care of a home, and it can get just little by little out of hand a little bit. So any comments on that? You guys relate to that at all? By the way, I should say this. I don't think there's any way anybody should expect the intensity of the courtship to continue post-marriage. I'm not that much of an idealistic, dreaming, romantic man. I think I am somewhat of that, but not to that extent. Okay? It's not going to happen. It can't. But it doesn't need to go so far the other way that it's non-existent. So if you're marriage doesn't look like it did during the days of your court or your romantic life, and your courtship doesn't look like it did in those dating days, don't be surprised. You know, you're new to each other, there's new discoveries, but now it becomes kind of a little bit mundane. We can take one another for granted. I was going to read something I don't have in your notes here, but Paul Tripp had some other stuff to say about inattention. Healthy people are healthy because they pay attention to their bodies. They pay attention to what they eat. They pay attention to signs of illness or disease. They pay attention to the need for regular exercise. They don't expect to be healthy without paying attention and responding to what they see and feel. I'm deeply persuaded many marriages get to an unhealthy place simply because they have been neglected. So I think that's the point, the inattention. Sadly, many of us are better at responding to crisis than we are at working on prevention. And that's really what this class is about, is I don't want your marriage to get to a crisis point. Let's do some preventative marriage counseling and some preventative marriage work, marriage crisis work here. We're all guilty in some way of taking our marriages for granted, and in doing so, taking one another for granted. So I think just as he says here, you became a student of your spouse's personality, taste, and politics, theology, family history, and dreams for the future while you were dating. You do all this because you're committed to know her or know him and know her well, and you're committed to know her well because you want to win her. So that's how it happens. You have this pattern, get married, inattention, neglect, start taking one another for granted, start to almost dislike each other at some point if you're not careful. So I think that is a threat to each of us? And again, what are we looking for here? We're looking for relational intimacy and to know one another better and better. I think that takes care of this. But I got a question for you here. If this syndrome, this complacency, lack of attention, neglect, is allowed to continue unchecked, what things might it result in? What's going to happen?
Distance.
What kind of distance?
Emotional.
Yep. It's probably in half of those marriage counseling forms that come in that say I feel disconnected, or is that I feel a disconnect from my spouse.
So it leaves a void too, so then your attention is drawn to something else. So if you're not, going it this direction and you're not getting anywhere, you tend to go a different direction.
Yeah. What else?
Resentment.
Resentment.
Yeah, because you're your companion, your partner.
Yeah, huge one. Yep. Chris?
I think that's something that we can see, and I will couch this by saying this. I remember seeing this at my church in childhood, not here. When we live with people where divorce is not an option, I've seen many older couples that live in a cold war with each other because they are stuck with each other because they love God, but they don't like themselves. And just, I've seen old, in public, I have seen older couples, I remember this very clearly from childhood, older couples even in the lobby of church bickering and fighting with each other. Like they're siblings that are mad that they're stuck on a car ride.
Well said. That's what can happen. Yep. That's what's happening in these older couples that I've been describing to you guys that I meet with. Pretty sad.
It's funny because I remember Danica and I would get married, and one of the things we both said was we have to take divorce off the table as an option. It's not an exit, it's not a possibility, whatever. Looking back on that, I realize it's one of those things you learn, like as time goes on. Oh, some people could use that almost like cheap grace, easy grace. No divorce, I got nothing to worry about, I can do what I want.
Like yes.
Person
yep.
If it's supposed to be this marriage is representing Christ and his body, then you have some people who want to be in that body, but without, they walked an aisle, they said a thing, and then that's it. On the other hand, it's like the reason you're supposed to take that off is to say, that means we have to work through everything to make this work.
Yeah.
Because we don't have that option, therefore, we've got to figure it out.
Yep. I think that brings up a good point. What else can happen?
I've heard of situations of people, they stay in it for the kids, but then once the kids leave the house, they decide to divorce or whatever. And I've, heard the analogy of it's like a ship's passing in the night, or it's like having a roommate that you don't really, so you don't spend time together, you just live in the same place.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to the second question a little bit, but I think people stop spending time together doing things that they don't necessarily want to do. And I think that goes back to the selfishness versus the self-sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Maybe the hobbies aren't the same anymore, or like when you're dating, you want to spend all of your time with the other person.
Even if it's doing something you personally wouldn't
even
like
if
that
it's
way.
Doing something you really don't care for. But then I think
you're just with that person.
You
I'm
do
saying.
Get into the pattern of having children or other hobbies or jobs or whatever. And it's like, well, you can go do that. I have these things that I need to do, and I'll catch you later.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing either. You certainly
yeah,
should have some things that you can do on your own. But I think maybe one of the remedies is choosing to do the things that you don't really care to do because your spouse wants to do them.
Yeah. There's a great reward in that.
And one of the other things that can happen too is you're just modeling and to some extent perpetuating this kind of marriage for your kids. So that's just normal for them. And so when they go into their marriages, it's like, yeah, you kind of just go through motions together and marriages. I think in our culture, marriage is seen as this, it's like necessary evil almost. But that's how I hear a lot of people talk about their spouse and about their marriages. It's just, there's not the companionship. So it makes me think, like, what am I modeling for my girls as far as what the husband is supposed to do? How he's to love his wife. So that's kind of a scary one.
We did.
But be careful.
We did something a couple of years ago where we asked our kids to critique our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was what?
To kind of just, what do you think about our marriage?
Okay.
Is it something that, it was good, but they had to say it was good. It was insightful, too. And when I've told people we've asked that question, they kind of cringe, like, ugh. I don't want to ask that question, you know, but they were. I think Abe was maybe a senior and Sam was maybe a freshman. But yeah, just from their point of view, what does this look like? You live here.
Yeah. It's a good point. I think what happens in marriages like this.
I work with people that sometimes you know what's going on at home because of the way they speak about their husband, because mostly women in the unit I work with, and you know, you begin thinking badly about a guy that you don't even know, first of all. But it's been, I'm going to just brag a little bit. I have a great husband, and I say nice things about him. And so people at work
go, Alan,
would love to meet him. Would love, they're like, well, yeah, but you married him. I'm like, well, why don't you start talking nicer about the guy, and
yeah,
maybe this would get better. Do you think, maybe? But I mean, you know, it's just what you're saying tells a lot, and that's where your heart is. And you're speaking from your heart, and people at work really like Alan, okay? And that's because I make sure they know that we have a good marriage, and it makes a difference if I'm giving advice or something. They know where I'm coming from. I'm not coming from an unsuccessful situation. I don't mean brag on him, but he is a pretty good guy.
You can brag on him. I think that is great. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about how the marriage relationship mirrors Christ's love for the church, a husband loving his wife. And so you're a great example of that. And praise God, that's the way it should be. And to the point of your fellow workers that speak ill.
That's right. They love Alan. They don't even know him.
Yeah. And you're tempted to not like their husbands.
Exactly.
Because of
exactly.
A critical spirit
yeah.
That exists,
sure.
Which we could talk about as another threat. And I've said this to some people in here, I know, but when it comes to a criticism and encouragement, Tim Bryan from Low Country always uses this ratio for every time when you encourage your husband or your wife, you're putting a dollar bill into the bank. When you criticize them, you're withdrawing $5. So he's saying 5 encouragements to make up for 1 criticism. I bet it's more than that, to be honest, because I bet you remember your spouse criticizing you more than you remember them encouraging you. But I think his point is just get that ratio where it should be. Speak words that edify and build up and encourage, not those that tear down. So it's a little bit of a sidetrack there, but it's sad, and I think sometimes this happens in prayer circles, like, can you pray for my husband, can you pray for my wife? And subtly we're kind of knocking them down in front of other people, almost gossiping. So I don't know, just a caution there, how that can, you can make people think of your spouse in a way, by the way you present prayer requests, right? So how you speak of them in that manner is critical as well. I think this syndrome, if allowed to continue unchecked, can result in emotional and physical affairs. Even in people who are strong, I go back to Proverbs about those who have fallen to the adulterous woman, and it says many of the, these were strong men who fell. So if you're not giving the proper attention that is due to your spouse, they may seek it somewhere else. There may be somebody else who's glad to give it to them and cause them to begin to look at another place. In fact, in his book, Intimate Marriage, R.C. Sproul, when he wrote that book, he said, there's 16 different couples he was counseling, and many of them, that was the situation they were in. So God forbid, but that's what happens when a marriage isn't being attended to in a good way. We have strong desires from all of us. We like attention. We love to be loved. And if our spouse isn't doing it, we're going to be tempted to look at somebody who will. I'm just being really blunt. So those are actually good desires. It's great to want to be loved. We should want to have somebody that does that. That would be a good thing. You don't have to have that to survive, though. We'll get to that here, I think, in our next one. But so I think that's a warning too, just how that door gets opened when there is a breach in the closeness, in the attention, in the affection. When it's weeks, months, drifts into years where that happens, starts to open up additional temptation. Okay, Marcy had some good things to say about what wisdom and counsel would you give to this husband or wife as well, who's in one of those situations? The bottom of page 5, last question. Biblical counseling class, what counseling would you give to a good marriage that apparently is starting to slide? There's apparently some neglect that's happened. Relational distance is occurring. They're disconnected emotionally.
If it's a woman counseling a wife or a man counseling a husband, you've got to focus on what their responsibility is. Okay, regardless of what your wife is doing, what should you be doing? And push them to godliness toward their wife. And I think that'll grow their affection. And in most cases, that's going to have a positive outcome for the spouse. They're going to see that affection, that love, and usually respond favorably.
There's probably a pretty big temptation for that wife to become bitter in doing those tasks without feeling like she's getting the attention in the marriage that deserves. But I think you would have to counsel her in continuing to do those things faithfully without the bitterness or resentment, irregardless of how the husband acts and if he would ever change his behavior.
Yeah, that's great. And do it as to the Lord.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, for husbands, are you loving your wife like Christ loved the church?
Yeah.
Probably not. None of us.
Because I think we're all quick to go to the imperatives or the commands of scriptures, and that's where I think we should go. I think we go to the indicatives first, which is to love God. So I would counsel, what's your love for God like? What's your love for Christ like? Because if you love me, you'll what? You'll keep my commandments. So there is a return to that first love. Like, are you passionate about honoring and loving Christ and fearing God? So go back to that. Go back to your walk with the Lord. Where is that at? Then go to the commandments of husbands. Don't be harsh with your wife. Husbands, love your wife like Christ loves the church. Husbands, live with your wife in an understanding way. Wives, see that you respect your husbands. husbands, nourish and cherish your wife. Are you cherishing your wife? By the way, there's some resources out there, husbands, 100 ways to cherish your wife. Maybe you ought to get that. Anyway, so all those kinds of counsel, I think, would be good at some point to bring into either your own marriage that maybe is in that stale kind of time, or somebody that you are friends with or counsel with could speak into their life. That would be some good counsel to give them.
I think specifically for the wife in that instance too, I think men can be kind of goal-oriented in general, right? So him in that dating relationship probably wasn't just viewing her as a goal. Like he really was trying to pour into her, love her. But there is a sense of security once you get married. So know what his goals are. Like why is he concerned about whatever goal it is he's trying to achieve? That's what RC's making it sound like here, right? Like, okay, like there's some other goals I have now. What's important to your husband, right? Mm-hmm. Continue knowing him, even if his main source of attention isn't on you at the moment. There's gonna be an intimacy with knowing what's on his mind,
yeah.
Right? And so that getting to know, again, him being able to reveal himself to you. Did you take the time to ask him? Right? What's on his mind? Why are these things important to him?
Yeah. Getting to know the other person always brings about intimacy and emotional connection. Okay, last question on top of page 6. What hope can you give to a couple in a season of coasting inattention and neglect? Talked about before the counsel you can give them, but what hope can you give them? Because people can get pretty discouraged. People can get pretty down. I would say that tends to be more the wife who gets that sense earlier, just because I think they're more attuned, oftentimes, not always, but more attuned to the temperature of their relationship, marriage relationship. But we're always taught in biblical counseling, give hope to people. So what hope can you give somebody who's in the marriage that's slid a ways?
Kind of what Brianna was saying, just right on that, but your role as a wife and fulfilling your role of wife is not to get something from your husband. It's not. The hope is that if you're being godly, right, it will influence him. But mm-hmm. your fidelity in that area is to please God. And so there's a hope in that. So that even if the relationship doesn't change, you have an eternal reward for being faithful and a hope of influence on your husband now. So, but the goal isn't to get something from your husband.
Yep.
And I think that's often, because we want relief, right?
We do.
And
we want's a good thing, it's just that we can't make it the thing we have to have.
Right. But the thing that you are commanded to do is to do what God has called you to do. And you hope. So, if you have a husband that's disobedient, for instance, or if he just won't engage, then you notice Joe left. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding.
Come back, Joe.
No, but yeah, that you can be, in your faithfulness, you can please the Lord Christ, and that's the goal. And even if nothing changes.
That's where your satisfaction has to come in, is my goal is to please the Lord, and that's satisfying. That's the number one goal. And then I think the other thing you said that is very important, and Tim talks about this in Seven Hopes of a Heaven-Bound Saint, is a hope of influence. Like you're not doing that so the other person will change. You are doing that to please the Lord. Mm-hmm. But you do have the hope that the influence of that can bring about change in the other person. Not a manipulative way or anything like that.
I think another thing would be, I think for men, we hear a lot in the culture, and I think we maybe even use it ourselves, like, women are just too hard to understand. Like, so I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. Like, God's expectation is clear. So with clarity, there's hope. It's like, hey, you serve and love your wife. You lead her. Like, so you go to the scriptures and you say, hey, there's hope here. Even if you don't do it exactly how you think your wife wants you to, you're obeying the scriptures, you're obeying the Lord, and there's hope that if you, as you get to know your wife again, you'll figure out what's most effective in helping her feel cherished and loved and nurtured, and that's good. But start with the scriptures. Like, it's simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. Simpler than we often, mm-hmm. you know, don't use that cop out of, I just can't, I don't know. I don't know what she wants. That's an excuse that you're using to be, you know, to neglect your duty. So go to the scriptures. They're clear, and the Lord will help you. And that can be hope-giving.
Very hope-giving. I think it is simple, like you said. Like, for a husband, you say, well, I don't understand a woman, or woman, I don't understand a husband. If you obey the commands for each in your specific roles of husband and wife, I think you'll see what happens as a result of that. You don't have to understand at some other level. Just be obedient, and you will reap what you sow. You really will. You sow righteousness, you'll reap the harvest of righteousness. David, did you have?
No.
Okay.
I was thinking about in the very beginning, the thing about complacency, and there's a difference between contentment, finding your contentment in the Lord, finding your contentment. Being content does not mean being complacent. You know, mm-hmm. it's you're still being aware, but it's realizing that it's the difference between happiness and joy, right? It's one is a little more impervious to the things that happen that can immediately flip you out of happiness, but you know, joy is a contentment that's different, and I think it's more, to me, that's a hopeful thing, to know that if I keep my focus is on Christ, if my focus is on His intention for my marriage, His intention for my relationships and things, then it begins to change what I view as. There's still struggles, or there's still, but you know, that's life. That's sanctification. Anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of sanctification, a hope that I would give anybody in this situation is that sanctification is a process, not a one-time event. Yes. One of the most valuable statements I remember. So we expect our spouse to change immediately and completely and for the better, but it's a process. It's a process for me, right?
Yeah.
So don't expect it to be any different for your spouse. Like, give people time to change. That's one of the most valuable pieces of advice I heard a pastor give at the Shepherd's Conference. Give people time to change. God's giving you lots of time to change. Sanctification's a process, not a one-time event. That's hope-filling.
I've heard Tim mention too, like, it can be profitable to interject your own stories or your own witness of how Christ has changed your heart or your spouse's heart, to give that hope of, you know, they need to be okay that a situation might never change, but also give them an example of what it has.
Yeah. Change can happen. The Word of God is powerful. The Spirit is impressive in sanctifying us. Be patient. Don't panic. But actively seek to work on your marriage. It's worth it.
I think, too, there's and I'm going to be generalizing. I have 5 sons and a husband, but men tend to be a little averse to asking for help. Like, if they're struggling, they don't know, I don't know what she wants, like what Brock was saying, but they're also not asking. And women tend to be, on the other hand, like, he should know, right? I shouldn't have to tell him. So there, you need to be willing to be active in bringing about that conversation. Sometimes, what do you need? What do you, how, you know, what would you prefer? Sometimes, because a lot of this boils down to preferences.
Yeah.
And how you're interacting with one another. And,
I think that was part of the evolution of love languages, you know, like how can I love, what do you, how do you like to be loved, kind of thing.
I think that kind of got a bad rap because it got to be like, you have to love me these ways.
Yes.
But I think there's something
legalistic performance type.
Right. But to know your spouse in a way that, like,
yeah.
Well, having good communication, talking to each other about each other.
Yeah.
So if you're, well, he should just know, right? Well, have a time that you can share these things where you can just talk back and forth about them, because most of the time you do that and one of the others like, oh, I didn't know. And so then things can change. But if we stay bitter and cold, it's not gonna change.
Yeah. Yeah, ask. Men, you can ask. I remember one guy said that husbanding is like a gardener. Your wife's the garden. Now, you're much more than that, wives, but the difference is a garden doesn't speak, but your wife does. So ask her. She can tell you what she needs. You have to look at a garden. What does it need? Fertilizer, weeding, water, insect control. But a wife can talk. They're usually pretty honest, I think. You ready, men? Chris.
I think that something that we've been dealing with at home a lot with Tuff is, frequently is reminded that having sisters is an enormous benefit, because I grew up with my brother, who's 4.5 years younger than me, and our childhood was me just kind of pushing him around, to be totally honest. But Tuff has girls in his life that he is, and I'm like, you get to learn to live in an understanding with women now, one slightly older and one slightly younger. Like, you get to learn to live in an understanding manner with females right now. This is super helpful. And so I've seen in him, in shepherding him through what this looks like for that kind of thing, is like the time to ask your sister these questions is when you guys are having a nice conversation and you're finding out about her preferences, not when she's frustrated with you and you go, well, what do you want? And that's kind of the, kind of that's the same thing through that, and kind of the hope of that too is that in these things that we believe in, like if you attend our church and you're a member, you believe that God is sovereign over all things, that Christ literally holds the universe together through the will of his intent in any given time, and you don't think that God can fix your marriage if he doesn't will to do so. He can take you as a corpse and bring you back to life and restore you with his Father. But the disagreements you have with this other person is too much. And maybe that's callous to say in a counseling situation. But I think being reminded of God's greatness and what God has already done makes these things much easier to fix.
Yeah. Go to the indicatives. These things are true of God. He spoke the world into creation. He can handle what, he can change. You can change. He can change your situation. Well, sound me like Tuff's gonna be one of these sensitive guys that girls are gonna like.
He's not. That's why we do this all the time.
Okay. Put the hammer down, Chris. That's right. Okay, well, we're not going to get to the next one. So marriage part 3 will be next week, Lord willing. We're going to talk about understanding reason for and the purpose of marriage. So appreciate you guys' input. It's pretty good to hear from y'all. Very, very profitable to hear your counsel and wisdom and your thoughts as well. So we'll see you next week.